From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
But I'm going to say it loud and clear. You have legislators here who are pro-life. We are pro-life without exception, and we're here to fight for you in this legislative body.
In essence, these bills would allow abortion anytime, for any reason, with or without a physician in or out of a healthcare facility and paid for with taxpayer dollars.
Healthy family communication can't be legislated. And if a young woman makes the decision to have a child, she doesn't have to notify her parents. She only has to notify her parents if she plans to have an abortion.
My bill, 45 pages long. Every page is scratch out, scratch out, scratch out, scratch out, scratch out, scratch out, with the exception of student teaching.
Representative Sue Shearer, she's a Democrat from Decatur, also a retired teacher. She's working on legislation she believes could help relieve the teacher shortage. A report says that's getting worse, not better. We'll talk more about that. And also a big anti-abortion rally this week at the State House. And it comes as legislators are considering proposals that some say could make Illinois the most progressive state in the nation when it comes to abortion laws. We'll discuss that and more this week on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford. And joining me in studio today, Charlie Wheeler, the director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also, we have IPR State House reporter Daisy Contreras, as well as Jacqueline Driscoll, IPR's health reporter, and Dusty Rhodes, who covers education for Illinois Public Radio. Well, we're in that period of the legislative session where bills are moving in committee and maybe on the floor of one chamber, still a long way to go before becoming law. But a lot of discussion and negotiations are taking place, and we want to get an update on some of these topics. Let's start with one that's been more one of the most talked about ideas that's been going around the State House this year, legislating recreational marijuana. And Jacqueline, you've been following this. Where does this stand now?
Well, there isn't huge developments so far. There has been a working group created. I'm told that it's a large group. There's several different stakeholders there to give input, and they're meeting a couple days a week. There are still no details released about how the drug would be taxed, where the tax dollars would go. Again, that's all still being negotiated. I'd say the biggest development this week discussed was legislation that was earlier introduced by Representative Marty Moylan. He is a Democrat from Des Plaines. The legislation, in essence, is saying that we need to slow down the legalization of cannabis. He does say that he has several co-sponsors. I think he was up to 59, so just one away from what's required to get it to pass through the legislature. So we have people that are talking about moving cannabis forward, and then other lawmakers who are saying, we're not going to vote for it. We want to slow it down this session.
Is that just more of a send a message that, hey, you know, we have some issues with this. We want included in the final legislation, or at least in negotiations. Does it seem like this could derail getting this passed this session?
You know, I don't know. I didn't get the chance to speak to Representative Moylan about it, but I know that he's talked previously, months before, talking about saying that he does want to slow this down. We're moving too quick. You know, we're trying to get this passed so we can get some money in next year's budget. So it just seems like he wants to make sure that we're incorporating all of the pieces that needs to be included when we're legalizing cannabis.
Charlie, we hear this a lot, don't we, that lawmakers, they want something fast-tracked. But then all of a sudden there seems to be a movement to say, hey, hold on a minute, don't go so quick, and let's not make mistakes as we're going forward. So you wouldn't take this as something that could stop legalizing recreational marijuana from happening this session.
No, I don't think so. I think, as Jacqueline said, there's still a lot of moving pieces, a lot of agreements that have to be reached, a lot of issues that have to be sorted out. The law enforcement community is pretty much against legalizing it. One of the reasons is they're afraid that you'll have drivers impaired driving stoned, which would be a hazard not only to themselves but to other motorists and pedestrians. And as I understand it, there's no real good way to tell whether or not you're impaired from marijuana use. If I go out and get drunk and get in the car and I get stopped, I blow the breathalyzer, they take my blood, they can tell what my alcohol content is, and they can tell under the legal definition whether I'm drunk or not. There's nothing analogous for marijuana. And marijuana is a substance that its traces remain in your body for a long time, even though its effect on you has dissipated days before. So that's what they're still trying to figure out. How can we handle that? That's just one issue. There's another question about who's going to be allowed to get in on this recreational marijuana. There's a debate about, are there enough growing centers now to supply a recreational field besides the medical field? The current growers say, yes, we can handle it. There are other people who want to get in on what could be a very lucrative business opportunity who are saying, well, there's no way with what we have now we'd also be able to supply a recreational demand.
Money is the key thing here, really, when we're talking about these negotiations. I know there are people who say we want to take it off the black market. We want to have some new legislation that can help the situation of people going to prison for drug crimes, things of that nature. But really, it comes down to lawmakers are trying to figure out just what Charlie was saying, isn't it, where, you know, who's going to benefit from this, financially, and what will the state benefit as well?
Right, and that's all still being negotiated. I know that their Representative Kelly Cassidy and Senator Heather Staines, both Democrats from Chicago, are really crafting this proposal, and they want to be careful. They want to make sure that they're doing it in a way that, as you mentioned, they're getting people off the black market because they know it's a safe product. They may be able to get it cheaper on the black market, but they don't know what they're going to be getting in it. It could be infused with chemicals found in rat poison, for instance. So there are still a lot of moving pieces, but obviously money is one of those key issues that they're discussing.
And before we move on to, also there's discussion regarding the current medical marijuana program and what's going to happen to that going forward.
Right. So there is legislation that has been introduced, and it's passed out of committee. Essentially just legalizes the current program that we have. It makes it permanent. It makes it permanent instead of a pilot program, which is what we have now. Also, the way that it is written is very unique because it says that someone could gain access to a medical cannabis card as long as they have any symptom or condition that their doctor says could be treated with cannabis. That's a big jump from what we have now. We have about 40 debilitating conditions. Chronic pain isn't even one that is included. So I did speak with the sponsor. He's a new lawmaker, Representative Bob Morgan. He was involved in rolling out the pilot program, though, so he's well-versed on the issue. And he says he is open to changing that language because he knows that that's going to be something of contention as they discuss the bill further. But he does want to make sure that the list of debilitating conditions is expanded so that people who do need the medication are able to get it.
A lot of people came to the Capitol this week. In fact, so many, I believe I read where it was shut down briefly. They couldn't hold more people for basically what was an anti-abortion rally about some legislation that is starting to surface at the Capitol. And Daisy, give us an update on what we're talking about here.
Yeah, so there are several bills, proposals right now in the General Assembly that would kind of have this overhaul of abortion rights. One, for example, would repeal decades-old laws intended to criminalize abortion providers. Another one would repeal the requirement of prior parental notification for minors who want to receive an abortion. So the rallies at the State House, they want to keep these laws in place. They don't want to have overhaul of for abortion. So the Reproductive Health Care Act would also require all private health insurance companies in the state to provide coverage for abortions. As you mentioned earlier at the top of the hour, Sean, there's this idea. Governor Pritzker has said that he kind of has this idea to make Illinois the most progressive state in the United States when it comes to abortion rights. And I think that especially for this overhaul, a lot of these are not moving through committee, but some are. And I think that's what caused a lot of pro-life advocates to come out to the State House. I mean, it was on the calendar for their lobby day, and they do this every year. But I think the number speaks to a lot of the protest on that.
And that parental notification law, from what I recall, if anybody can correct me on this, but that is, it's been on the books, I know, for a long time, but for many years it was not able to be enforced. And I think only in recent years that has changed.
Yeah, so it's a law from 1995, I believe, and it wasn't reinforced until about 5 years ago. Minors who don't have permission from their parents to receive an abortion would have to go up with a judge, in front of a judge, to get that permission.
So, Charlie, this is something, of course, that's come up year after year. We've seen this at the Capitol, abortion legislation. But with a Democratic governor who's talked the way he has about some of these laws, there is this renewed optimism among people who want to see this type of legislation pass, and also probably a little renewed fear from those that don't.
Yeah, and I would say one of the things that's changed is looking at the composition of the U.S. Supreme Court, because after the Roe v. Wade decision in the early 70s that made abortion basically legal, in Illinois, the Right to Life folks would pass legislation and it would go to Governor Thompson, who would veto it. It would be overridden to restrict abortion. It would be taken to the U.S. District Court and the law would be thrown out. And it was kind of a game that both sides played to win constituents back home who felt very strongly on these issues. But I think now what Daisy was referring to, part of the original negotiations that created the first framework for legalized abortion in Illinois involved having to make compromises. People who were anti-abortion had to, I guess they came to the realization that if there aren't any laws on the books, then this is going to be crazy. And so they worked with the pro-choice people to fashion a framework for regulating abortion. But they also left in place, and this was a concession to the pro-life people, a section of the law that said if Roe v. Wade is ever overturned, then Illinois' prior law takes effect again, which made it a criminal act to have an abortion or to provide an abortion. And for many, many years, this was not a really big issue because you looked at the U.S. Supreme Court and you realized from past decisions they're not going to overturn Roe v. Wade. But since President Trump has been in office and has appointed two very conservative justices, I think the fear on the pro-choice people's part is that should a case actually get before the Supreme Court, there's a chance that Roe v. Wade might be overturned. And so they want to try and, at a minimum, get that section out of the law that says if it's overturned, it becomes criminal.
And you mentioned, Daisy, that there was some legislation that is moving and some is not. So the whole package that has been introduced is probably chances of that getting through maybe a little less because maybe lawmakers don't want to tackle all of that. But the one that Charlie talked about, maybe something with parental notification could possibly get through.
Yeah, it seems that parental notification legislation is moving forward. Pro-life advocates say that they weren't really given enough opportunity at the table during committee to kind of voice their concerns. So they're still upset about that. They argue that parents should always be involved with decisions, especially when it comes to minors who might not know what they're doing. If we recall over the last year with HB 40 was a big issue for former Governor Bruce Rauner when he signed that into law,
that
which would expand abortion coverage under state insurance for state workers. Abortion continues to be an issue, and even for him, he really believed that it should be up to women to kind of decide what they want to do and when it comes to health.
You know, I think the danger with the parental notification is what happens in those situations where the young woman is in a horrible home situation. Mm-hmm. There have been cases where the woman is pregnant because of somebody in her family who assaulted her. And the ideal Brady Bunch type of family where the kids and the parents are on the same page and they talk to each other all the time, that doesn't exist everywhere. And so I think the notion is that there are instances in which a young woman can't go to her parents, and so therefore we have this judicial bypass. And I think the pro-choice people would just like to say, let it up to the individual. Let the woman decide for herself. If she wants to consult with her parents, that's fine. If she doesn't, that should be her decision.
And, of course, on the other side, they'll say, you know, for even minor medical procedures, that parents need to be notified or possibly even give okay.
And so the rejoinder to that is, if I'm going to get my ears pierced, well, that's
that's kind of a
looking forward let's to say.
Let's say if a young woman is going to get her ears pierced, she asks her family. She's not going to get thrown out of the family.
Right.
And disown because she wants to pierce her ears.
And I know that I'm fairly new to the State House, so Charlie, I don't know how often it happened in your career there, but the State House was shut down because of the sheer size of these protests. And I know that there are other gun lobbyists there. There are obviously people from the press corps, people who have to be there every day, but just trying to navigate through the State House, they were on every single floor of the State House looking down in the rotunda. I mean, the crowd was predominantly white, but there were old people, middle-aged people. Some people brought their kids. So this is obviously an issue that we have not heard the last of.
Yeah, and I saw the pictures. I wasn't down there, but I saw the pictures, and it was fairly unusual. And the security had to shut it down while they moved some of the crowds from gathering on the first floor and moved them up around the second floor and the third floor around the rotunda. Every spring, the first floor, the central rotunda around the statue of Illinois welcoming the world gets filled up for rallies of all different kinds of things. School kids just coming through. It's not very often that they have to move the crowd up to the upper levels because of the size of it. So, yeah, that was not unprecedented, but certainly not common.
Let me move on to another topic, and this is in the education realm. We have Dusty Rhodes here, who covers education for us. We've been hearing, Dusty, for a few years now about this teacher shortage that the state has, and people talking about ways this can be resolved. There is some legislation out there that at least the supporters of it think could help in this help with this problem.
Right, and actually, I was not one of the people clogging up the Capitol because I was over at the State Board of Education on Wednesday where this was a topic of discussion. So I kind of feel like we're witnessing a pendulum swing. Apparently, the teacher shortage to some significant measure can be traced back to around 2012 when we raised cut scores for teachers to pass certain standardized tests to get a license. And superintendents have testified that they went from having hundreds of applicants for every open position to feeling lucky if they had three. And so the pendulum seems to be, you know, swinging back the opposite way to take away the testing requirements. Nobody wants to characterize this as lowering standards, but the fact of the matter is those high test scores don't necessarily equate to being an effective teacher. So there are bills out there that would the State Board of Education has already taken away they're phasing out a thing called the TAP, Test of Academic Proficiency, and Senator Andy Menard, Democrat from Bunker Hill, has already filed a bill that would take away any basic skills test. So cut scores meant you had to score a certain, achieve a certain score in an ACT or an SAT. So that's not going to be a requirement if his bill goes forward. There's another test that people seem to, that there's more conversation on. It's called the EdTPA. And it involves videotaping a student teacher delivering a lesson, costs $300. People have a 97% pass rate on that, but those are students who've gotten already through most of their college teacher preparation. So there's also content tests you have to pass for each subject area that you plan to teach. There's more conversation around that, keeping that maybe. So it's just going to be interesting to watch.
I know you talked with Sue Shearer, who's sponsoring some of this legislation, and again, a former teacher herself. I thought she made a very interesting point. You asked her about things that people need to have that may be inherent to being a teacher but don't necessarily show up in a test. One of the things she talked about was you have to like kids. And that sounds like that's pretty simple, but, you know, I might be able to pass the test if I study for it. And whether or not I like kids, that might not come into that equation at all.
Yeah, it does seem kind of crucial. One superintendent who testified at, well, okay, so Representative Shearer had a big hearing on, what day was it, Wednesday, that started at 3 in the afternoon, and we finally left at 6. Shearer, being a teacher, brought snacks. I've never been to a hearing at the Capitol where the host brought snacks, but that tells you what a teacher does. And they were healthy. They were healthy, but there were also cookies. So one superintendent testified that he has had, you know, plenty. You know, all the teachers in his district have met all those test standards. But he's had to release teachers. And he said, inevitably, the reason he's had to release them is because they can't play nice in the sandbox. They can't get along with, they can't form relationships with students, with other teachers, with staff, with parents. And he pulled out a cliche that you hear in education circles, that they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's not something we can test for.
Before we move on, it seems to me one of the big keys on keeping teachers or getting people to go into the profession could be the pay as well.
Right. And so, again, Senator Andy Menar has a bill that would raise the minimum teacher salary up to $40,000 by the year 2022. He's still planning to go forward with that. And there's a little more debate about that since we've already got this minimum wage bill. So school districts are kind of scrambling how they're going to do both of those things.
Before time gets away from us, too, let's talk about something else that we mentioned, some of the issues that are hanging out there in the legislature and possibly could become law before the session is out. And that is, one of those is sports gambling. We've heard a lot of discussion about how this could work or if it could work in the state of Illinois. Daisy, you've been following this. Is this still on track for possible passage?
Their lawmakers are definitely set on legalizing sports betting. Last month, when Governor Pritzker presented his budget proposal, he said he's counting on some money, $200 million, from sports betting, from licensing fees. And he didn't really give much detail into how exactly that was going to work. And again, we don't really even have a framework. People have been asking for the last month, you know, how is this going to work? And finally, this week, we had four proposals filed on how this framework might actually work. Some of the ideas take from New Jersey that recently also legalized sports betting. Other ideas make it so that there's like a combination of brick and mortar places where you can actually place your bets, like getting casinos involved in the mix, and racetracks as well. Another option would have the Illinois Lottery Department to just kind of basically make up all the rules for that. So I think what lawmakers are trying to do moving forward is just having all of these options on the table and kind of letting everybody kind of come to the table and express their concerns, see what they like, see what they don't like. And finally, we're going to start having the first hearing next week on the issue, where stakeholders are going to weigh in on these four proposals and see what they don't like. And another one is the Pro League, the pro sports leagues that want a share of the money here. They're like, well, you know, you're going to be betting on the games here, on our players. One option is that they would provide the data, the player data, and, you know, but they want some money to go to them as well. And some states haven't followed that model, but they're putting it on the table here for Illinois just to see if it would actually go through. But I have a feeling that's not one of the most popular options there.
I have a feeling we're going to see a lot of lobbying on this going the next few weeks.
I have a question about it. You mentioned the pro sports leagues. What about the NCAA? This is the beginning of March Madness, and I would be willing, I was going to say willing to bet, but I'm certain that there will be literally billions and billions of dollars wagered on college basketball. Has the NCAA made any overtures that when you legalize this stuff, we want a piece of it?
I have not heard, but I'm pretty sure that, you know, once, you know, this has been growing over the last year since it became an option for states to get their own laws in place. And pro leagues were very quick to jump in on that. And I think some states that do have already a legalized system, casinos or the providers, the ones who hold the licenses, would actually talk to the pro leagues and see what share they might get. So every state is very different on how they've approached the issue. It's just how much money is going to generate and how it's actually going to be overlooked.
So again, we'll see probably people coming in, lobbyists that maybe we don't even know coming to the Capitol, because we're talking about some national organizations, could be the NFL, Major League Baseball, places, you know, NCAA, as Charlie mentioned. So this still has a ways to go, even though these hearings are starting up.
And I think that's the big question that we've had for the past month, actually. Will we have enough time to get this all figured out by the time session is over?
Time now for our notes from the field. And Dusty, let's start with you.
Oh, okay. Well, back when we passed school funding, one thing that it did was create a panel to review and recalibrate the formula as needed. That panel sent their first recommendation to the General Assembly, and it got completely ignored. I'm hearing a lot of grumbling about how the panel functions, and apparently it's not functioning as anticipated.
Okay. Jacqueline?
The final draft of the rules for the industrial hemp program in Illinois were submitted to the legislative rulemaking group that will either approve or send them back to be reworked. Some of the things that were noteworthy in those rules, they did remove a few things that will allow farmers to get into the field a little earlier. So it is possible to see hemp crops being harvested this year, and it also changed some rules regarding seed certification.
Charlie?
Well, one of the issues that's out there that I would be fairly certain is going to be dealt with this spring is a capital program. Discussions are underway among the governor, all the various stakeholders, lawmakers, and the Senate has been having hearings all around the state as to what the local capital needs would be. Senator Martin Sandoval, who I believe is chair of the Transportation Committee in the Senate, unveiled legislation this week that would kind of jumpstart the process. He's proposing, the most significant element of his plan is to double the state's gas tax from 19 cents a gallon to 38 cents a gallon, index it to inflation going forward. Because over time, that 19 cents that was put in back in, I want to say 1989 or 1990, doesn't go as far. For a couple of reasons. One, inflation has increased the cost of the products and the salaries of the people who fix the roads. And secondly, with better mileage on cars, fuel efficiency, and the advent of electric vehicles, it doesn't produce as much at the pump as it used to.
Daisy?
Earlier in the week, Governor J.B. Pritzker announced that he reached an agreement with SEIU Healthcare Illinois to begin paying a 48-cent an hour raise and back pay to more than 40,000 home care and child care providers. These raises were withheld under former Governor Bruce Rauner's administration.
All right, that does it for this week. Members of our broadcast included Charlie Wheeler, Daisy Contreras, Jacqueline Driscoll, and Dusty Rhodes. Get a podcast of our show at nprillinois.org. Also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. Production assistance for the program today provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.